What is going on, crypto family? So today we got William Quigley. He's the co-founder of WAX, World Asset Exchange, coming back on for part two. We discussed some updates since the last time he was on, more pain points of crypto and how they're trying to fix that. We talk about China. It's a great conversation. Please help us grow the family. Give us a comment and review on the Apple or Google Play Store. It's super quick and easy. Just scroll down, click the little stars, comment, and just help us grow the family. So let's go meet William and I'll catch you on the other side. What is going on, crypto family? So today for part two, we're bringing William Quigley back. Sorry, I got a little bit of a strep throat. He is the co-founder of the Worldwide Asset Exchange, man, also known as WAX. So William, appreciate you, you know, struggling through this with me while I'm trying to talk, but it's always great to get an update and hang out with you.
Yeah, I know. I guess we missed each other last week in Las Vegas for World CryptoCon and Blockchain Week, but I'm glad we get to chat now.
Yeah. I actually had my voice then, but then after, it sounds like both of us were just going stage to stage to stage. And so my voice is pretty much hamburger right now, but
it was crazy. Yeah. I know, just a lot of running around, but it was productive. You know, one of the big differences I saw this year versus last year, there was, a lot of more people were in build mode. They hadn't launched as much. And there were still a lot of projects I saw that I wasn't quite sure why blockchain was part of it. Like, people still figuring out if, do we really need a blockchain to do this? And this year, I would say the majority of the companies I met going through the trade floor were doing things that made sense. Now, they still got all the challenges of building a business, but at least the overriding idea of, a blockchain is useful for this particular business was there this time, much more than it was last year.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more. We were seeing a lot of silly stuff last year. It seems like this year and a lot of the different conferences, the money's kind of dried up for maybe some of those chamois, showy type companies. And so the ones that are actually building something of value, more of those are at these conferences. So yeah, it was cool to see some of that for sure. And sorry I didn't get a chance to meet up with you in person there, but there's always
the next one. We probably wouldn't have had much time anyway.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. But it seems like there's a conference every week, every day. So I'm sure we'll bump into each other at one of the other ones.
Yeah, for sure.
So what's going on with WAX, man? Since the last time, you know, we had you on, you guys are doing all kinds of cool stuff, token swaps. You guys are live, right? You guys have your chain out there.
Yes. So we launched, we completed the token swap September 1st. And so now we are just building out the thing I talked about last time, which was the service layer. And for those who didn't hear me last time, one of the things WAX has is a layer that sits on top of the blockchain with a whole bunch of microservices, services that make it easy for dApps to integrate social logons and just rapid account creation, because friction in literally using the blockchain is a big deal, as everybody knows in this space. You know, if you have to use MetaMask or Scatter, I mean, those tools are okay, but they're not convenient. They would scare away a lot of consumers, particularly people who just want to play video games. And then WAX Express Trade, so an ability to, almost like what Lightning Network does on top of Bitcoin. So WAX Express Trade does something similar on top of WAX. It makes it very fast to trade and exchange tokens or whatever digital asset you've put on WAX quickly and for free. So that, we think, is necessary because of problems with delays and volatility and fees to have people transfer stuff back and forth. That's one of, you know, the top two or three biggest impediments to mainstream adoption. And then we have a number of other services, you know, WAX Marketplace, so people can set up their own marketplace to sell virtual items. That one hasn't been released yet, but soon. And WAX Item Creator, which is out there now. So you can create, what if you're an Ethereum person, be like an ERC NFT, you know, where you're just able to, but do it like very simply. You name the item, you decide how many of these tokens you want, and then you're done. And then you have NFTs, non-fungible tokens on the blockchain that you can send really easily using WAX Express Trade. Soon with your email or with SMS, so you won't even need to do it via blockchain code. So everything we're doing is to make it easy for consumers to get the benefits of a blockchain without the hassles of the blockchain. And I think we're about to release a, I guess you'd call it a cloud wallet, where we will, again, it has similarities to Lightning in that you'll be able to send your tokens back and forth. We will be holding the private keys for you to do that. So for video gamers, most of them wouldn't really care. If they want to, they can withdraw those NFTs to their Scatter wallet or whatever, Ledger wallet, whatever they want to. But as you know, those things really aren't designed for rapid, convenient interfacing with blockchains. So everything we're doing is like convenience and tools based.
It's incredible. Yeah, it's one of the things that I keep saying, especially when I go to these conferences and whatnot. I always say crypto sucks. It sucks for people to actually use, to interface with. The UX, UI is horrible. People are trying to be educated in blockchain, and that's the wrong way to do it. We need to be just making things easier for people to use, because they don't want to learn something new. Nobody wants to learn something new for the most part, unless you're an overachiever. But they don't want to have to learn something new just to play a video game or something like that. So I think it's pretty incredible what you're doing. Very cool.
Thank you. Yeah, and as you know, as a developer, amazing how hard and complicated it is to make things uncomplicated and simple. Yeah. It's a lot of work to put in abstractions so that, people don't have to struggle with it all. And so that's been a big part of what we're trying to do with Wax. And then because we used the EOS delegated proof of stake consensus mechanism and other parts of EOS.io. We are backwards compatible with EOS. And what's great about that is we're also therefore compatible with a lot of the tools that have been built on EOS. Block producers on EOS are starting to port those tools over to Wax. There's a number of those. Defuse, if you're familiar with them, they're a great team. They also run EOS Canada as a block producer. Those guys have created some very high quality tools and are now integrated on the Wax blockchain. Search tools, so you can do real-time indexing, filtering, a lot of abilities to filter and stream the change in state going on the blockchain, things that a lot of dApp builders would probably have to build independently, which wouldn't be very efficient. So this API-based tool set is terrific. In fact, there were things on our roadmap that we just decided not to do when we saw what Defuse is doing. And we said, look, we'll just invite you guys to integrate that stuff on the Wax blockchain. And this is probably the area that a blockchain that I like the most is that there is so many ways you can leverage what's already been built and integrate it into your chain.
Definitely saves a lot of time and resources on your end when you're able to just implement something somebody else has already done. It's pretty awesome. One of the things I hear all the time is, what's the point of blockchain, right? So this is a little different from what we were just talking about, but it's still similar and related a little bit. But people, they say they don't see a need for blockchain. Why don't you just use a database? What do you think are some of the major use cases for blockchain? It could be centralized or decentralized, but maybe name off the top three, you think.
Well, I can tell you, I just did a video on this, so maybe you can reference that later on.
There you go.
I've been thinking about this for about 7 or 8 years. Like, what is the purpose of the blockchain? When you first learn about what a blockchain is, it's if you're intellectually curious, if you're just interested in technology and where it's headed, you can get really gee whiz by it, even if you don't know, well, what can I actually use it for? So I will tell you, I went through a journey with my partners on what to do with a blockchain. We've come up with, there's probably about, maybe it's four or five things now. In fact, here's how I would put it. The blockchain is the worst possible way to do just about anything except. And there are four or five exceptions for which a blockchain has no equal. It is just the optimal way today to do that thing. Now, the most obvious one is, of course, the non-fiat issuance of money, because Bitcoin, of course, was the very first use case of the blockchain. And non-fiat issued money, non-governmental issued money, is the first, and I would say still the best use case of a blockchain. And for the audience, there's all kinds of reasons why putting a medium of exchange in a blockchain is superior, right? And, you know, the immutability and permissionlessness, all those play into it. So that's one. The second one I would say is, and it's related to the first, but the second would be the creation of stable coins, which really changes how cross-border payments are done. This is the reason my partners and I invented Tether, which was the first stable coin. The ability to avoid, it's not just the payment processing fees, which are large, but they're in the tens of billions annually across the world. But the real massive benefit is in avoiding currency conversion costs. And currency conversion costs are somewhere between $750 billion and $1 trillion annually. And that is pure profit. We're not talking revenue. That is pure profit captured by groups that have been blessed by governments to be lawfully allowed to exchange one currency for another. And going all the way back to biblical times, governments have always closely monitored and regulated who can exchange money because there's a built-in profit. So the emergence of stable coins that allow people to send a non-volatile medium of exchange anywhere in the world near instantly with immutability so that you don't get stuck with chargebacks or other types of fraud is a great, great improvement even over, I think, Bitcoin itself. The other, which has been touted a lot about, but I would still say is people are right to be excited about it, is the application of blockchain for supply chains. Supply chains are global, and supply chains are just these information-rich streams that everybody in that chain, there might be 200-300 companies that are involved in the building and ultimate distribution and shipping of a product to a customer or a store. And most of these companies in that supply chain today have very limited visibility, other than maybe directly from their vendors supplying them components, and then the downstream company that maybe they're handing it off to do some more value-added development. And there are products that have thousands of different companies that are helping to build or create the final end product. And as we've seen again and again, not just in food products, but in other products as well, when there are safety issues or recalls, it's always a cluster to figure out, like, who's responsible and how much work in process equipment is in the supply chain that needs to be set aside. And so blockchain is so great because it's one layer, and if you design it as such, it's transparent to anybody who's got a browser, but or to whoever's part of that supply chain, and it's immutable, right? So just in case somebody wanted to play some funny business, they can't. That's a huge value add. I think it's, like I said, one of the best use cases. And then another one I would put up there is my industry, virtual assets, whether they're in-game virtual assets or real-world assets that have been digitized. The use of a blockchain for that is spectacular because you eliminate a lot of the counterfeiting risk, and because people who want to buy and sell these items, and they could be World of Warcraft gold or, CSGO skins or some other NFT that a new dApp has built, people who want to trade those and get the best value for them and tap into this global liquidity pool will benefit greatly by having all of that stuff on a blockchain, because everybody can see it and we know it's genuine. And that ability to instantly discern the genuineness of the item is such a powerful aspect of blockchain. I was talking to a group the other day and I said, you know, when they said, well, you know, what good is a Bitcoin, or gold is much better and so on. And I said, yeah, does gold self-identify as gold? Does gold just say, I'm gold? Nope. But a Bitcoin does. A Bitcoin, you get that and you know instantly with no effort. That's such a key point. No effort, no cost. You know, it is a genuine Bitcoin. If you hand me gold, first thing I'm going to say is, well, I don't have an assay lab in my pocket. Is it lead or is it gold? What's the purity of it, right? That's always an argument that people criticize in crypto and then comparing it to things like gold or even currency, always ignore the fact that, you know, North Korea is the second largest printer of US $20 bills, or that none of us would have a clue how to ascertain whether a piece of metal in our hand is real or not. Bitcoin solved that proof of authenticity problem without any side costs. So that's a terrific one.
Not to mention, if I give you $1 million, you know, dollars of gold and say, hey, go cross the border, good luck with that, right?
In a wheelbarrow.
Yeah, with Bitcoin, you just put the 12 words in your little brain and just walk across the border, go get yourself another phone, download the Monarch wallet, put the 12 words back in it, and just like that, your $1 million of Bitcoin is right there in your hand.
Yeah, yeah. So those things, I think I did 4 there, non-fiat money and supply chain and virtual items, stable coins. Those are all really powerful use cases for a blockchain. And I would say there's not an existing technology that would be superior in those cases. Now, as we move beyond that, there are some things that for instance, around DeFi, I think being able to obtain or collateralize digital assets on a blockchain and then do something with those, whether lend against them or convert them into something else, you know, make or die, you take your Ethereum, make or DAO, and you create a DAI, a stable coin out of Ethereum. I think we're just starting to explore and figure out the benefits of on-chain leverage and on-chain collateralization. You can't really do that with any other technology, so I might say that's another area. Call it, broadly speaking, collateralizing lending against assets in a way that's avoiding counterparty risk and can be done rapidly. I mean, you can create a MakerDAO collateralized debt position in, you know, a couple of minutes.
Sure.
That's another really interesting one. Now that's just evolving.
Sure.
Outside of those, I'm not as sure what's out there. In fact, I say sometimes in crowds when I'm presenting, like, what is another outstanding use case? And I'm waiting. I'm sure there will be more. It's like the web. It took a while, you know?
Sure. The landscape's definitely going to change over the next, you know, couple of years. I think decentralized finance has got, it's got a long way to go. It's going to be fighting an uphill battle. I think there's going to be a portion that's going to have to be centralized, a portion that's decentralized, because the regulatory bodies are going to be all over this stuff, man. When they start realizing that, hey, wait a minute, they're not using banks anymore. They're using all these decentralized, you know, financial controls. What do you think is going to happen? I mean, you already see like IDEX and all these other guys having to implement KYC, AML. You notice all these decentralized exchanges are no longer, you know, basically just letting anybody come on without knowing who they are. So you're seeing the centralization coming in. So it's
going to be difficult. You know, I was not as confident that decentralized applications and services would be practical in the near term, the next 5 years. And in the last couple of years, I went from thinking it's going to be really hard to thinking, well, possibly. And now, particularly with DeFi, I can see some great benefits to decentralization. And also some, in 2020, there will be there will be brand new ways things are decentralized. As you know, sometimes the word decentralized is tossed around almost without any real meaning being attached to it. It's almost like synonymous with blockchain, but right, there's nothing else there. The vast, vast, vast majority of blockchain-based services are not decentralized. And if you want to get super, you know, abstract, maybe you say Bitcoin's not decentralized because of the mining pools. But it's almost like how blue is blue. You know, you can never really say this is it. This is where blue ends and whatever black begins. I mean, there are some things that are clearly not decentralized. That would be your crypto exchanges. And then, MakerDAO. Is MakerDAO decentralized? Hard to say. I mean, it depends what your view of oracles are. If you view oracles as a, because it's an off-chain dependency, in the case of MakerDAO, that's to establish what the going fiat price is for Ethereum. Then you'd say, well, no, it is dependent on something off-chain. It's a small dependency in a way, but a critical one, right? This is like, how many angels can dance on a head of a pin argument, sure, in a way. On the other hand, it's a worthwhile discussion because there's more and then there's less decentralization, and which ones you want.
Sure. Just like if you look at what you're doing with your cloud wallet where you're holding the keys, if that was completely decentralized, it would be very difficult for gamers to use. I think there's got to be trade-offs.
Very good point. Yeah. And there, my thought was, well, I'm going to give them the option to hold the keys, but there's going to be a lot of people who say, you know what, it's not important to me that I hold them. And in that case, you know, we'll do it. But that is a centralized function that we're fulfilling.
Sure.
But we're trying to be market sensitive to the needs of the people who want to do this stuff. There was, a time when it was mostly purists, everything had to be in accordance with the Satoshi future, pure decentralization. And you can do that, but your audience is going to be pretty restricted.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the companies out there that are surviving or thriving, they're 95-98% centralized. Your Binance, your Coinbase, anything out there, right? That's what people use. That's what they want. So I think there's going to be this little trade-off between decentralized and centralized to get the people actually using it.
Who wants what?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're trying to do strict, just like very simple store value, you want to do a paper wallet to hold some BTC, we can make that pretty darn decentralized.
Sure.
As soon as you need to start engaging with lots of others, it's harder. Though I do think this is an area of fascinating research and development, and I'm doing precisely that because I think it's worthwhile getting some of the benefits. The more we can reduce exposure to single points of failure, then the more secure we are.
Gotcha.
And one of the reasons we selected delegated proof of stake as a consensus mechanism was because of this fact that we thought in many ways it might be easier to drive decentralization, not for everything, but for some things, than proof of work. So we're still pushing the envelope here, trying to make sure that we stay true to that. And this microservice layer is really more about convenience than it is about specifically decentralization, though we always try to offer that as well. If you want to use a little convenience tool, great. If you want to hold everything yourself and do everything yourself, that's okay too. You know, either option's available. One of the things you need to do that, though, is I think we spent a lot of time at WAX trying to figure out what was broken with governance, particularly, off-chain governance, and what we could do to contribute to better solutions there. I think Dan Larimer at Block One, the creator of EOS, he did a lot of excellent work in rolling out DPoS, Delegated Proof of Stake, and we adopted a lot of what he did. And then when we looked at things like, well, how do things get changed on the chain? You need to have votes. Votes are done based on how many tokens you have. That might not be perfect either, but it's about trade-offs. It looks like the most straightforward way to vote what should happen in the future of a chain is to count up the people who actually hold a stake in the tokens. And so the difference between us and EOS, though, was you were not getting rewarded on EOS if you staked your tokens and then voted. And we thought, you know, it's going to be hard to get people to stake and vote unless there's something that they're benefiting for from doing that. So we have staking rewards, which are in part influenced by how frequently you vote. And you are voting primarily today for the people who are running the minor equivalents of a DPoS chain are called block producers. In the case of Wax, we call them guilds. But the groups that are validating these transactions on the blockchain are they got to get compensated somehow.
Sure.
And so you vote those guys in. And so we initially said, all right, you're going to vote for these block producers. And if you vote and you vote frequently, you will be rewarded with more tokens that you'll get from out of the inflation pool. And then we realized just recently that, well, we created a method for people to vote for the right block producers, but we didn't create an easy method for them to evaluate all of the block producer candidates. And that is a beast of a problem. And in the end, what we did is we created something called the Office of Inspector General. We just announced that. And we took, by the way, one of the early members of the EOS team, a guy named Thomas Cox, who's done a lot around governance models development. He proposed this idea to me. He said, why don't you have an Office of Inspector General, a group of people paid for out of inflation of the chain, who are voted on by the community, who evaluate in some objective scorecard, evaluate the candidates who are going to be the block producers or the miners for the chain. And they just publish that periodically. In this case, it'll be once a month. The community voted some great competent people in. It's a group of three people, and they rotate, I think, every 3 months. And they've just created the scorecard. I just saw it. It looks great. Right now it's in Telegram and people are going through it. And, you know, there's technical things to consider. There's how well are you contributing to the community and so forth. And they're just going to publish a scorecard ranking the block producers as they see fit based on this scorecard. And then it's not required, but if you would like to look at, well, who are the better quality block producers who are doing the most work for the chain? Maybe I should vote for them. You can look at that. I think any DPoS chain in the end will want to do something like this because, you know, I was a venture capitalist for 20 plus years. To evaluate a company takes a long time. Now imagine evaluating like 100 block producer candidates and you can only pick 21 of them, you know?
Got your work cut out for you, man. So I think the Office of Inspector General will definitely help out finding, you know, proper block producers. So
yeah, me too.
Awesome.
So those are some of the things we're working on, you know, today.
Cool. I guess something a little bit off topic would be, you know, what do you think about China as far as, you know, now they're all embracing blockchain. You had the central bank that came out and said, hey, for the past 5 years, we've created our own blockchain. We're releasing our own crypto. We're hearing that they may be hoarding 20,000 pounds of gold. We've got the U.S. that's, you know, saying, well, what's this Bitcoin thing? Let's get Zuckerberg in here. We'll just get, you know, little sound bites for our next congressional run and not speak of anything of value that helps the American people and just keep, you know, suppressing Bitcoin and blockchain. And you got Canada that just embraced the ETF, but you got China now that basically said, well, all miners are welcome. They reversed that ban on mining. And you've got the president, you know, Jinping, or I forget exactly how to pronounce it.
Jinping.
Yeah. He's like, it's everything's going to be crypto. And you got WePay, Alipay, DashPay. You got all these things that are just a little hair away from being crypto because nobody over there uses paper money. They're all using electronic money. So when they're using Dash and Alipay and all those types of things, WePay, everything, you know, this crypto could really have 1.8 billion people on it, you know, like forcibly, like tomorrow. And then the rest of the Asians surrounding that are also using WePay and Alipay, you know, very shortly thereafter. So what do you think this means for the dollar? What do you think this means for the US? And kind of what's your thoughts in general?
Well, so first, it didn't surprise me at all that China is very interested in exploring what they can do with blockchain technology. While China in September 2017 banned China-based crypto exchanges, they did not ban the ownership of crypto, the ownership of Bitcoin or Ethereum or whatever. And that was noteworthy. And they were actively encouraging their software developers to continue to innovate in the blockchain space. I suspect there are several hundred different groups within China affiliated with universities or otherwise with the government that are building tools that are blockchain-based. So China is very interested in this stuff. And then you get to the value of a government currency that is issued as a crypto. And I think the Chinese are well aware of the just the unbelievable benefits of, let's say, like a stable coin. In fact, I did a video on that too, because I was so disappointed with Mark Zuckerberg's performance in front of Congress a week or so ago. I mean, arguing the merits of a stablecoin is like arguing the merits of higher education or, you know, clean running water. It's hard to not argue.
Nobody wants clean water.
I can't think of a single bad thing about a stablecoin. And I think the Chinese understand this way better than the U.S. Congress, who thought of it as an either or with respect to the U.S. dollar. Well, if your stablecoin is backed one-to-one to a U.S. dollar, the only difference is you're making that dollar more portable and simultaneous for all the authoritarian impulses of the U.S. Congress and China, more trackable, much easier to track. I mean, there's a reason the Patriot Act was such a beast of an act. And that was because when the U.S. government started to try to figure out how did these terrorists conduct their operation in 9/11, they realized, well, follow the money. But following the money was very hard. Different banks in different countries have different rules for what sort of information they collect and provide. And so Patriot Act was this giant intrusive attempt to provide perfect transparency to the U.S. spy agencies around the global movement of money. Your audience may not even be aware, but it is unlawful for any bank in the world to transfer a U.S. denominated wire transfer to another bank, not in the U.S., just from one bank to another, even outside the U.S., that is now unlawful. They must always first clear it through a U.S. bank, and because they want to see where all U.S. dollars are going. Well, of course, that just means the bad guys now will do it with euros, right?
Sure.
But China is China understands that, you know, the power of your currency is very closely related to the power of your economy. And the greatest privilege that can be granted any country is for it to be able to issue debt denominated in its own currency, because that means it'll always be able to pay it. It just prints more of that currency. And that's also the reason why most countries are not allowed to print debt in their currency, because people know what would be done. So China is going to do two things, I think. They will launch stable coins, one or more. They will embrace blockchain because it's immutable. So they don't have to worry about people keeping clean records. You can never modify them. And authoritarian governments like that. And then China is going to, I am sure, down the road, this is the part that is concerning. I'm sure at some point they're going to do like whitelist, blacklist sort of wallet configurations. So you're a Chinese citizen, your blockchain address has been KYC'd as yours. That's where you receive all of these cryptos, whether they're Bitcoin or a Chinese stablecoin. And if you have this side address on a blockchain, that's going to probably never be able to be used to buy any legitimate things, because they'll just say you can only accept cryptos from whitelisted addresses. So that'll make a, it'll be like a two-part world, the whitelist and the blacklist. that's sort of like my thinking of how this will go. I hope the benefit of China saying what it's saying is in the next year or so, Congress decides this is important.
Awesome. So with the white and the black listing, you know, something you pointed to there, one of the things I've always feared about with China is that they'd actually kind of implement some social engineering. If they don't think that you're a good person, or for whatever reason, they could just freeze your funds, pull your funds back, you know, just pretty much just take away your, you know, your, I guess your finances, your ability to transact with the rest of the world. So that is one of the scary things about it. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's scary, but it's scary because we're seeing elements of this today. You know, we hear this term a lot, unbanked, and there are voluntarily unbanked people and involuntarily unbanked people. Anyone who has years past tried to do a lot of transactions through their bank account, their personal bank account, once banks decided they didn't like crypto for whatever reasons, they started to ban people, right? Deny them access. PayPal's famous for just randomly denying people access to their services. And the reason this I have such great issue with that is if you're regulated by the states and by the U.S. government, and if you're not regulated, you can't offer a particular service. So only people who get a license and are deemed, valid can get the license. I think those groups have much higher standards for denying the general public access to their services because they were given a limited license, and therefore there's a scarce number of people who can even offer those services. So you deny people, and the worst part about it is the denying is often done under this new cloak of meaninglessness that many companies now use. You'll get a notice and it'll say, for compliance reasons, .. We are no longer able to. What the hell does that mean? For compliance reasons. And it's a nonsense statement. What it means is, for reasons that might have to do, we just don't like you, a potential competitor, competing against us, but if we say that, we might be subject to an antitrust suit. For reasons like that, we're just going to use this blanket for compliance reasons, right? And you're done. And I think it's a new form of discrimination, financial discrimination, and the fact that these companies are not answerable for that. Most of them say, and you know what, we have a policy. If it's for compliance reasons, we're not allowed to tell you why. Or maybe it's because, you know, they don't like your skin color.
Sure.
Maybe because they don't like your political speech. Maybe it's for other reasons that the U.S. government has protected citizens around, but they don't tell you that. They just say for compliance reasons. Now, obviously, as you go to places like China, they probably don't even need to send you the reason.
Sure.
It's
just a letter.
you're denied.
Right.
And all these technologies, as you know, they can be used for incredibly good things, and then they can be used as tools to further the interest of authoritarians. And, hence why creating a viable set of truly decentralized services is a big, big challenge, but a big, I think, benefit for people in crypto. Because as we said, the vast majority of services today on blockchain are not decentralized.
Agreed. Like I've always said, man, you know, blockchain's either the biggest freedom for the people or the largest enslaver of the people.
Yeah.
Only
yeah,
time
can
will
you
tell.
Imagine? You got to have a whitelisted wallet, you know?
Well, on a more, happy note, last time we talked, we were talking about you and sharks and talking about talents that you wish you had that you didn't, that maybe one day you would. So have you learned how to paint yet since the last time we interviewed?
Of course not. I haven't learned it yet. I'm not going to.
What about dancing? Are you now?
Dancing,
you know,
I'm still bad. Yeah.
You're still bad?
Yeah. I have not learned. I've learned a lot more about the intricacies of blockchain governance than I have about those two things, which I'd like to learn more of.
Gotcha.
But a lot to do.
All right. I hear you. You've done a lot already in the space, you know, for a long time. You've been here, you know, developing and creating things. And what's, you know, with Wax, you know, what's your end goal there? Where do you see this thing in the next, you know, 3 years? If everything happens just the way you want it to, what's William's thoughts?
Well, we are building a blockchain that's easy to access with simple tools people are used to. Where people are able to trade lots of different digital assets at no cost, and do it highly securely. So that is the overarching plan, and it takes, as we talked about earlier, it takes a lot of effort to make things easy. And so the Wax service layer, with all these different microservices that we're doing, you know, we've got an RNG, a random number generator, since almost every application uses that. All the tools that we think most or many dApps would need, we're trying to build and put them on chain. And that is, that's a several year endeavor. And my sort of vision is that a greater and greater percentage of the world's valuable assets are digital in nature, and digital assets are the fastest growing segment of the fastest growing segment of the global economy. The fastest growing segment of the global economy is cross-border commerce, and the fastest growing segment of cross-border commerce is digital. You know, music and software, IP, licensing rights. Of course, even Bitcoin is part of that, and it's small, but it's growing. And so our vision at Wax is things that are like right in that intersection of globalized cross-border commerce and digital assets. And it's fascinating. If you look at the rise in the value of digital assets, or non-physical, if you want to make it more broadly, in maybe 1970, I'd say the Fortune 500, 80% of their market value was based on property, plant, equipment, working capital, inventory, physical locations. Today, it's probably 15 or 20%. Of the value of the S&P 500 is reflected in the physical, and the rest of that value is non-physical. You know, it's brand and patents and process know-how and rights. You know, legal rights. You might have a right as an airline to a gate at a popular airport. It's not a physical thing, but it's valuable, and so. Things that are non-physical can be digitized, and things that can be digitized can be traded. And the friction of trading cross-border, because of all of the barriers there, not the least what we were talking about earlier, which is currency conversion, that makes it a really sweet spot for blockchain crypto people to focus on. And so that's the overarching vision for us. And so anything we can contribute to making that easier, we do.
Well, I have faith in you. You got a great track record. And then so in the last episode, I think I asked you if you had a time machine, you know, if you would go forward or back and you had to stay there. But this time I'll ask you a couple of different questions. So I don't want to repeat anything, right? So if you could be anybody for a day, so you could be anybody you want. You could be a historic person. It could be a celebrity. It could be anybody you want. If you could be anybody for a day, who would it be?
Wow. Anybody.
Anybody. You don't have to stay that person. You just,
I might be an astronaut who's in the space station for a day, because I'm never going to go into space, but that would be cool. You know, just one day, especially the guy who's about to do the EVA maneuver. That would be cool. Alternative would be somebody in a, maybe working for the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute and about to go into a submersible.
There he is, French.
Either of those two ends would be awesome, because I'm unlikely to ever do it.
All right. And the last one, if you had a time machine. So before you said you'd go back to, I think, around Independence Day. But this time, if you had a time machine and you didn't have to stay there, you could come back. Where would you go? What event would you go see? What point in time would you like to see and just come right back?
Well, on a very selfish reason, in, let's say, 1980, I would, if I could have a time machine and go in the future, I would, I'd only be interested in one piece of information, which would be, what is the interest rates for, 10-year treasury bills in 2019? That would make you a lot of money. So that would be one. I'd love to, didn't predict what was going to happen to interest rates. They're actually, they're negative for a lot of sovereign debt. There was a point last year where there was $17 trillion of sovereign debt that had a negative yield. Think about that. You are paying the government to lend it money.
Yep.
That's a crazy thing. So that would be a lovely fact for me to get. Heck, otherwise, I don't know. Maybe being there when the Wright brothers took off would be cool.
That's awesome. Well, very cool, man. It is always great to hang with you, pick your brain, and hear your thoughts on things. We'll make sure to get this video out for people as soon as possible. You've also got your own things you're doing now in media with, I think you guys had Wax On, the series. I've contributed a few times to it, so we'll make sure to put the links there for people as well.
Yeah, thank you. We're doing a lot of videos, which I think are great, talking about all things crypto, not just about Wax.
Sure.
That'd be good. What conference will you be at next?
Chainwise, tomorrow. So I got to pack up this strep throat and jump on a plane. So.
Right. Yeah. Well, hope you get a chance to rest.
Yeah. I'll get all the sleep I need when I'm dead. That's what I always tell people. So too much stuff to do, too many things to build. So sleep is highly overrated.
All right. Well, good talking to you again, man.
Likewise. Hi, my friend. Take care and God bless.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. And a big thanks to William. Always appreciate getting your opinions and takes on things. Always cool, as well as updates on Wax.
Just a friendly reminder, Crypto Beetle shows are never financial advice, recommendations, or trading strategies. The views expressed here are solely that of Robert Beetles and his guests. Robert Beetles is the co-founder of the Monarch Wallet, host of TradingView Sessions, Crypto Beetles on YouTube, and owns several entities. Robert's opinions here do not reflect that of those entities. Some information shared here may not actually be factual. These shows are for information and entertainment purposes only. Never invest a single Satoshi or penny in anything without first seeking the counsel and advice of a professional financial advisor. Robert Beetles is not a financial expert or advisor. Investing in anything is super dangerous. You can lose all of your money, so always trade at your own risk. Please help us grow the family. Give us a comment and review on the Apple or Google Play Store. It's super quick and easy. Just scroll down, click the little stars, comment, and just help us grow the fam. All right.
God bless you. Love you. Till the next one. Talk to you soon.